Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone.
Oh, sorry.
Good evening. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I wanted to say good evening to everyone, and we at DLN, and being the de facto head and crazy uncle of the network, I would like to welcome and introduce our newest member, and that would be Mr. Adam Ferenz. So, Adam, say hello and tell them a little bit about yourself.
Hi. Yeah, my name's Adam, and I am a TV and film fanatic, and my current long-term project is a massive volume on the greatest TV programs from around the world. And who knows when it's going to be finished. I'd hope to have it done in a year or two, but there's always more shows to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, he's having trouble.
Well, good.
Downloads from India.
Oh, I want to let everybody know that our second guest is here, too, also.
I'm here.
Well, why don't you introduce us to your second guest, Adam?
And the second guest
this is you, Carl.
Well, no, who is that gentleman in the background talking?
Oh, Doc. And there's also...
No.
Has Alan joined us finally?
Alan?
Yes.
Yes, he has.
Hey there, Alan. How are you? This is Alan. He's a film fanatic. And I'll let him tell a little about himself.
Me?
Yes,
you.
Yes.
Ah, okay. I'm a film collector. I mostly go for silence, noirs, pre-codes, Italian horror, and Godzilla films. And I got a collection of around 8,500 discs and around 8,000 compact discs and 2,000 books. And I sleep on stacks of each.
Good God. That's insane, Alan. Alan has, of course, been a guest on my show several times. Actual name, Alan Bryan. And we're glad to have you with us today.
Well, tonight I'm going to be Truman Capote, and I'm going to be talking about In Warm Blood.
Nice.
I have to get that one. But, you know, I thought that perhaps we should have done a different topic tonight. Instead of unusual vampires, that perhaps we could do Nazi zombies, since Alan happens to be the world's leading expert on Nazi zombie films, which actually is a subgenre, but alas, there's only like maybe 10 of those movies that are worth seeing, and that's not enough to fill a show. So
there are lots that aren't worth seeing, and those are also included. By the way, Alan, if you ever want to do a show, all you have to do is let me know. You're welcome to come in and do a show with us.
There's like Nazi zombie films. There's Shockwaves, Dead Snow 1 and 2, and Outpost 1, 2, and 3. And after that, you get into the schlock. You know, like Hell Squad and Nazis in the Center of the Earth and War of the Dead. And then if you go back to 65 or 66, The Frozen Dead. I mean, come on, you know? That's... in the Nazi zombie genre way out, but technically it is that.
There you go. Well, if you ever want to do a show, Alan, just let us know. You're welcome to do a show on Nazi zombies.
A show on Nazi zombies runs 15 minutes tops. Give me a break.
Well, here's the thing. Nazi zombies, maybe we'll do a sidebar on that someday. If we
someday,
ever decide to flag The Walking Dead.
Oh, God. I'm not going to do a show on The Walking Dead. I refuse.
Well, I said if we ever decide to do one where we flag it.
I don't even want to do that. I just want... Look, the comic book was very good for 50 or so issues, and then, you know, that's it. I don't care anymore. It's like Spawn.
Well, I'll tell you right now, the best zombie show on TV easily.
What?
Was C Nation.
What?
C Nation. I freaking love C Nation.
I don't know what that is.
You should check it out. It's hysterical.
I don't watch television.
Oh, okay.
Now, Alan's an old school TV guy and prefers things from before the advent of streaming, which is cool. But tonight we're going to talk about unusual vampires, and I thought this would be an interesting topic because we always hear about, you know, Dracula or Dracula-like vampires, and while those are all good and well, there are lots of other different types of vampire films and television shows out there. We all have our favorites, and I'm sure we'll get into that as we go along. But tonight I thought we'd talk about films and TV shows that either had truly unusual vampires or unusual, unique takes on vampirism. And I'll start off by saying that I watched an early Cronenberg film today called Rabid, with Marilyn Chambers in it, where she is the victim of severe burns after a motorcycle crash and gets skin grafted onto her, and something goes wrong, and this gash opens in her armpit that looks something like an anus and a vagina. I don't know how to describe it. And this pincer-like proboscis exits her, from her armpit and sucks the blood out of people. And it turns them into basically zombie-like vampires. It is one of the most unique, bizarre, and I'm not going to say great horror films, but unique horror films I've ever seen. And believe it or not, Marilyn Chambers does not do a bad job in the role. Has anybody else here seen that film?
Oh,
I
have to friggin' literally.
Of course you've seen it.
I haven't seen it yet.
I saw it.
So what do you guys think
of
it?
I've seen it. I saw it in a midnight showing, and I have it on Blu-ray. I saw it with like 200 people on a midnight show. You know?
I could see that being a very interesting midnight movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was. Because half the crowd there, I think, were hookers.
I like it.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding.
No, I'm not saying you are.
I'm saying half that crowd was hookers, I think, in the theater to get out of the winter chill.
That's a good reason. I could see that.
I used to beat the summer by going to the theater.
Say what?
Well, what I was going to say was that, A, it's a Cronenberg film, which means it's certainly worth listening to and watching. Did you realize who Cronenberg actually wanted to cast in the Marilyn Chambers role?
Sissy Spacek.
You know? Yes.
And they actually have a Carrie poster in the movie.
Yes, they do.
I thought it was, I'm not going to say it's a great film, but it's just one of those films where you watch it and you can't take your eyes off of it because it is so damn unique.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's
and a lot of it's because she doesn't even seem to realize what she's doing half the time. She's, you know, it happens. When she does her deal with that thing, she doesn't, I don't even think she's conscious of it. I think it just sort of has a little life of its own because it's a genetic mutation. And then, you know, after a while, she just doesn't care as long as she gets some kind of physical or mental satisfaction from that thing doing, you know, its dirty work. And as long as she's happy, she doesn't care, and the results don't seem to bother her.
No.
Well, I bring
yeah,
up
and if anybody,
one. You went crazy. Well, you oh, anything else?
No, I thought you were finished, but there was a click on my end.
Well, with Rabid, we are, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, if anybody's interested in seeing it, that listens to this, it is available for streaming and on disc, so it's readily available.
Oh yeah, they just came out with a new edition of it from one of the distributors. So, and I have an old Arrow edition that is really excellent. I'm going to throw one out there because is it a vampire film or is it not a vampire film? And that's Martin from George Romero.
Oh.
And that was 1977. And is the kid a vampire or is he not? He thinks he's a vampire. He wants to be a vampire. It's a psychological thriller more than a vampire movie, but, you know, it's creepy as hell. And it's from George Romero, who's more associated with horror maybe than Cronenberg.
Hmm.
So how many of you have seen Martin?
Oh, not only have I seen Martin, we've had John Amplis on the show.
Oh, there you go.
It's a tremendous, tremendous film. And Amplis is just fantastic. The whole subplot of him calling the radio show and the whole thing, it subverts the whole idea of what a vampire is, because he thinks he's a vampire, but he doesn't have fangs. He uses hypodermic needles to get the and knives to get the blood.
Razor blades.
He, you know, the garlic doesn't work on him, and his uncle, who takes him in, is all old school, and none of that has any effect on him. So it's a wonderful, wonderful take on vampirism that really is, you know, subverts everything, and so you don't know if he's really a vampire or not. It's never answered.
Yep. Doesn't have any of the usual vampire trappings.
Very cool.
Okay.
I have a kind of an oddball vampire flick for me. That's all right. Well, I recently was able to see the movie Life Force. We're talking extremely attractive, outer space, life force sucking vampires that annihilate London. It's wonderful. And the main actress in the film is unbelievably beautiful.
Matilda May.
Yes. Oh, wow.
One of the few canon films that's actually worth seeing more than once.
Well,
yes,
unfortunately, we still don't have an uncut version of that. They really cut it up. And poor Toby Hooper got screwed on that film. He really did, because they cut out so much plot in that a lot of it is unintelligible.
Well, you know the story behind the production of that film and canon, what canon did. There were two other films they were doing at the same time that each cannibalized the other, and all three films ended up with big, big problems.
Okay. What are the other two films?
One was Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, and the other was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. And they kept taking budget and shifting it from one film to another, and they would take crew and studio time. And, you know, I feel bad for every single person involved with those films. I don't blame anything on the directors of those movies, because they were not given anything close to even semi-reasonable working conditions, and you are not dealing with hacks for at least two of them. I mean, You know, Sidney J. Fury, some people consider him a hack. I don't. You look at his earlier work in Canada and his work prior to the prior to Quest for Peace, and he did some classic films. And, you know, then you have Tobe Hooper, who, I mean, everybody talks about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but the man did so much more. That was completely the canon way of screwing everybody over.
Life Force was fun. Yeah, I saw Masters of the Universe in the movie theater when it first came out, and I loved it, even though it wasn't really He-Man.
Yeah, you know, I was a kid. I'm younger. I'm 38 years old. And I saw He-Man, and I remember turning to my parents who had gone to see it with me, and I said, well, Skeletor was great, but that wasn't He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you have Frank Langella just hamming it up. And, of course, as I got older, I realized, well, shit, what they really did was a loose adaptation of Jack Kirby's Fourth World.
Ah, yes. Very good.
But we digress. So, Life Force. Do you think there's ever any chance that we're ever going to see that additional footage, or do you think it's lost to the ravages of time?
No, actually, I have an answer for that. It's not lost.
Oh.
I have an answer for that. Yes, Shout Factory just put out a steelbook version of Life Force that has all the footage.
Yeah, this was a few years ago. I've got that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. I don't want to show my ignorance too much, but did Tobe Hooper oversee that, or am I thinking of somebody else? Is he still with us?
Toby's dead, but right. I think I don't know if he had anything to do with the Arrow version of Life Force.
That's what I was thinking, is that he died recently.
Well, yeah. Now, what I would need to reference on this is I think Good Bad Flicks on YouTube did a piece on Life Force, and I cannot remember what he said about that. Cecil does that. I think he did Life Force, and I cannot remember what he said about the final cut of it. I would need to revisit that. So I'm going to plug a YouTube series, which if you haven't seen Good Bad Flicks, you should, because it's the best damn thing out there if you want to learn about films. And yes, he did
it's
do
a
Life
series.
Force episode. Yeah, he did do a Life Force episode recently, and he did in February, 2016, but it's still worth watching. And he would know, and his information would be up to date. I'm going to go a different direction, and I'm going to now talk about a very bad vampire film, which is barely a vampire film, but, well, you know, it's supposed to be one. It's got a very hot lady in it. It's got a lot of action. It's got motorcycle riding. It's got sword fights. It's got special effects. It supposedly has vampires, and it's called Ultraviolet.
Now, what the hell is that thing? That's a good question.
Well, what is Ultraviolet? There's supposed to be some kind of virus that makes people a vampire of sorts, you know, but they don't act like vampires, but they're superhuman, but it's a crazy film that wants to be a live-action Japanese anime thing, you know. It's kind of Ghost in the Shell before there was a Ghost in the Shell, maybe. I don't know. It's nuts. But if you like...
Now, is this the film where the cover has like a really almost a pinkish-purple haze, and it has a picture of a guy looking up with these funky sunglasses on it?
Ultraviolet? It's not a guy. Yeah. It was, I don't know about that. I don't know what.
Well, I was
I
thinking
no
that's because that's the poster
about.
I'm remembering. There was a poster or a cover of a film.
No. No.
Like
the,
that. So I was wondering if that was
the
it.
Cover, the cover of the Blu-ray has Mila Jovovich in a white outfit with a purple hue and a Japanese sword. I don't know, you know, and she's wearing shades in most of the film, but I don't know about any guy looking up. I have no idea what you're referring to.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering, because I remember the haze. I was like, I wondered why they wouldn't put her on the cover. So that might have been some sort of alternate poster that I saw.
They did put her on the cover. She's on the cover of, I've got the DVD and the Blu-ray, and she's on the cover. And yes, I bought both, but I didn't pay, I paid less than $10 for both. You know, they're not exactly very, they didn't cost much. But if you like that sort of breezy action, it's sort of like watching a cleaner version of what's that zombie film that she was in? You know, it's kind of like watching
Resident Evil.
Yeah, it's like a clean version of Resident Evil, because there's no zombies running around. Everything's sparkling, gorgeous, clean because it's the future. But, you know, everyone's fighting with each other. And
you just mentioned. Go on.
What?
Well, no, I was going to say you mentioned something and it made me think of something.
Ultraviolet is not a good film, but it's a nice time waster. It's an action film. It's fun to watch. It's silly. It's kind of like watching a side view version of Aeon Flux,
which is a funky little TV series that if people like weird animation, they need to track down.
I was referring to the movie version of Aeon Flux.
Oh, okay. Well, I liked the TV series. I thought it was really interesting. I didn't love it, but I thought it was interesting.
But I was talking about the movie version, which is nuts in itself. That's Charlize Theron, and there again, you got another woman with jumping around with swords and trying to act all badass, but she's not some kind of super vampire-ish sort of thing.
And it's a comic book movie.
And it came out a year before Ultraviolet, so go figure.
Okay.
Yeah, Ultraviolet is a comic book movie.
If I could jump in here,
yeah,
I want
to talk about have his day.
Jump in.
Yes, well, thank you
jump
for
in.
That, you know.
Wait in with your clothes.
So
on.
I'm going to mention two films because they are connected, and I'm going to ask why they're connected. Okay? The first one is a film from 1972 called Grave of the Vampire. And basically what you have, I think it's the first real film that deals with a half-man, half-vampire, because a vampire awakens, rapes a woman, and she gives birth to this half-vampire and actually nurses him with blood out of her breast. Now, this is a 1970s movie, but it should have been rated R and should have been a lot more brutal, but it's actually PG. But the interesting thing is this half vampire tracks down his father, the one who raped his mother, and he is a night school person, instructor. And so there is this battle between the two of them, and all I can say is at the end, the sins of the father are visited upon the son. Very interesting ending. Have you guys ever heard of that movie or seen it?
I got the Blu-ray. Yes, I've seen it and got the Blu-ray.
What do you think of the film?
Well, can I add a bit of interesting trivia before I say what I thought of the film?
Okay,
go
ahead.
Go first,
absolutely.
The co-writer on that film went on to a long and important career in television. His name is David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos.
Yes, I was going to mention that, by the way, but very good. It's a really interesting film. Stars Michael Pataki and William and B movie stalwart William Smith. Really interesting film. But what's interesting about it is that it was a major influence on another film that was filmed in the 90s, which is also a very unusual vampire film. And do you know what film I'm referencing?
You're not talking
Anyone?
About Blade, are you?
Nope.
Are you talking about Blade?
Nope.
Hello?
The film that was influenced by Grave of the Vampire was The Addiction by Abel Ferrara.
Oh, that. Okay.
Okay. Think about it, because you have
this
philosophy professor who is a vampire. The woman Lily Taylor is seduced by him. It's all about how do we live with this addiction? Philosophically, I've been alive for many years. This is what's and of course it's Christopher Walken too, but Abel Ferrara has said specifically that Grave of the Vampire was a major influence on the addiction. So I wanted to bring both of those two. And they're both, Grave of the Vampire is definitely a B movie. No question. It's a B, and it's a wonderful B movie. But The Addiction is much more philosophical, much more able at his peak during the 90s. It's a fantastic film. And I would recommend both.
Yes,
so that's
I haven't
what
seen
I
The Addiction. I admit to flipping on that one because, sorry, not seeing it.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't know why. Well, let's go to another weird one. Who's next?
I'll take it up for a minute. I want to mention two. I want to touch briefly back to Martin and say that there was a film that came out about 2 years ago called The Transfiguration, which was about a young black boy in New York City who was essentially a serial killer going around drinking the blood of the people that he was killing, believing himself at points in the film to be a vampire or to be becoming a vampire. It's not a great film, but the group I saw it with was split right down the middle. Some of them absolutely loved it. The rest of us wanted our money back. But there's no way the Angelica Theater was going to give us our money back. So we just went out and had dinner. But the other one that I was going to mention was, and I'll let you guys talk about it after I tell my story with it, is Let the Right One In, which I was enjoying up until the end when the DVD I was watching decided to start skipping on me. And it took me 20 minutes to watch the climactic scene of the film, which really ruined my initial experience, and I haven't been able to bring myself to revisit the film since, but I do remember enjoying it up to that point. So if either of you seen Let the Right One In.
Well, I've
seen
absolutely. Both the American version and I've seen the European version, Let Me In. So I've seen both.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but I've seen. Sometimes I get confused. I think, which one is, I'm blanking on, now I'm confused.
Let the Right
One
In
good.
Is the Swedish version.
That right. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, I like the Swedish version better. But that has more to do with, I don't know. I guess it's atmosphere, and I think it's a little bloodier, but I like the Swedish version better. The American is okay. It's a fine remake. If I have to rate them, I'll give Let the Right One In an 8 and the American one a 7. Something like
that's
that.
That's fair.
You know. Because you're not going to tell me the American's better.
Oh, No.
Remake
no way.
Is really better.
It is surprisingly good, though.
You know, it's interesting. There were a couple of remakes back around that period. I mean, while Ringu is a vastly superior film to The Ring, I think the original The Ring, the first remake in the American version of the series, is actually a decent film. I'm not going to say a great film, but a decent film. But pales to the original.
I agree with that. I think the American The Ring is pretty dang close to the Japanese Ringu. I give the Japanese is definitely creepier, but the American one, that girl scared the crap out of me.
The one they hired to play Samari, yeah.
And then there was also in the beginning when the friend, you know, suddenly dies and briefly show that friend like curled up in a ball of horror, and you have to like freeze frame it to see it because it goes by so fast. Yeah, that had me going like, what am I watching here? Yep. Yeah, The Ring is good. I will say that. But both of those films, you know, either version of, you know, young vampires, I don't think they dealt with it enough, but in the Interview with the Vampire in the novel, you know, you had a young girl who was, I forget her age, you know, she was like under 12 or something, though, who was a vampire, and she was not very happy being an underage, you know, a tween vampire. And in the book, she bitches about it constantly. I cannot remember if she's in the movie that much. Maybe somebody else will. We're talking vampires.
No, she is. She is. Ellie's in the movie all the time.
Well, I can't. Look, I saw that one once. I wasn't very into it. I saw it in the theater. I loved the book more. I don't know. The movie didn't thrill me. I mean, I remember Tom Cruise, but that's about all I remember.
Oh, you're talking Interview with the Vampire. I'm sorry. I thought you were still talking about...
I mentioned young vampires. I was talking about a vampire who was, you know, under, like, 14. You rarely see that. But in Interview with the Vampire, that character was very prominent in the book. I was trying to remember if she's prominent in the movie, and I couldn't.
Very much so.
I can't because... I've only seen that, like I said, I've only seen Interview once. I saw it in the theater, and it didn't make a good impression on me. So,
well,
I
not
need
Neil Jordan's
it,
best
like
movie.
It. No. All right.
Okay, so who's next?
Yes. Me.
Yes, it's Doc's turn.
Well, I'm gonna throw one out there. It's fairly recent, but dang, it was fun, and that's What We Do in the Shadows.
I still haven't seen that. That looks like a hell of a lot of fun, and I want to watch some series.
I don't care about the series. The original movie is what I'm talking about. I mean, come on, that movie is hilarious. I mean, it's just you got your... You know, you got different generations of vampires, and, you know, they're trying to get dates and blood, and it's so funny. But, man, if you want to watch something that's not a scary vampire film, but still is a vampire film, but not traditional vampire film,
yep,
you've got to see What We Do in the Shadows, because it is great. And it's from the guy that gave you Thor Ragnarok, so it doesn't suck.
Oh, Taika Waititi did it. I didn't realize that.
Yes, it's from New Zealand. It's a New Zealand production. Oh, God. Somebody give Adam a reference book once in a while. You know?
I've been trying to avoid spoilers for that film, so I'm trying to avoid as much information about it as possible.
I didn't give you any spoilers. I just said I told you the plot. I didn't spoil the damn film.
No, I'm just saying I haven't been looking it up, so I'm not aware of who did it. I'm like trying to go in as cold as possible.
That's not a spoiler. That's not a spoiler. Good.
That's
great.
Not a spoiler. I'm even with Alan on that.
I'm not saying that's a spoiler. I'm saying in my quest to avoid spoilers, I'm avoiding all the information because the way I read, I'll go down the cast list, the director, the producers, the writers, and then I'll just start reading about the movie. It's because
of how I
read. I'm just too complete a reader, and I can't help myself sometimes. So I'm like going, nope, I'm not even going to look up who directed it or produced it or anything.
No. But you call the best boy in the grip and ask him all about the background. I'm going to mention one bad vampire film, if you want to call it that, and that is the Hugh Jackman classic, Van Helsing.
You mean you didn't want to see that become the next $100 million a year or $200 million a year blockbuster franchise?
I'd like to see a sequel just because I think it'd be funny, but man, is that movie silly. It's so bad. It's got bad special effects. Dracula is some kind of mad scientist trying to, you know, have vampire babies, and it's insane.
What movie are we talking about?
Van Helsing. A sequel to it today, we know that if it would have to have Hugh Jackman, but given Hugh Jackman's career these days, it would be a musical.
Oh no!
And it would have a tune that everybody thinks is really popular, but nobody has the balls to say actually stinks. And it'll get played on the radio over and over again until you want to poke your eardrums out.
You're basically talking about anything on pop radio right now, no matter who does it. So, you know, what else is new?
All right. Okay. Carl, you want to talk about something? Or Adam? Anybody?
Yeah, sure. I can do that. Hey, we haven't heard from Doc. How about Doc do one?
Yeah. All right.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's a lot of people who like to see international vampires. And sometimes when you hit the Chinese vampires, people go, what the hell is happening? And the reason why is because Chinese vampires hop. And they also wear uniforms. Well, they're not really uniforms, but they're like death garb, which is like this blue gownish type robe and a little hat. And they hop and they like to smell people's butts, apparently, in some films. And you've got a ton of different Chinese vampire movies, like Mr. Vampire 1-5. Spooky Encounters had a vampire, I think, in there. And just the Chinese jump hopping vampires are goofy, but they can also be very creepy at the same time. But they're more played for comedic effects with some of the movies. It's like a horror comedy kung fu. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, listen, if you have never seen a hopping vampire film, you have to. It is a must. And the one I recommend wholeheartedly is Mr. Vampire number one. Sammo Hung is just fantastic in it. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. And recommend it highly. And there are several others that are almost as good. But that one is the creme de la creme.
I agree.
Excellent. Yeah, they're really fun flicks. I could literally put on a whole day's worth of hopping vampire movies and giggle all day long. They're just a lot of fun because it's something you don't expect to see. It's like, oh my, wait, hopping? That's actually horrifically adorable, if that's actually a thing.
All right. Oh yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to pop in here and I'm going to do a double feature of two films that you don't expect exist, but they do. And the first one is Defula. Yes, those with ears heard me right. Defula is a vampire movie in complete sign language. Did you know that this thing existed? Anyone?
Not until
yes,
you mentioned
I've heard
it.
I've heard of it.
Okay, well, one thing I do have to say is I am co-head of a large Facebook group called Incredibly Strange Films, and we have a gentleman that curates our YouTube channel, which you can just find under Incredibly Strange Films, and you could find Defula there on YouTube to watch. And yes, there are subtitles for those of us that do not sign. But the idea of how this story, you know, with its very, very much its romantic part, its sexual part, all that transforms into any type of telling. And so the idea of a deaf version of Dracula really is really well done on a very low budget, but very fine cinematography, black and white, and done with the aid of the American Deaf Association, the ADA. And so it actually exists, and you can watch it on the Incredibly Strange Films YouTube channel. Now, on a completely separate thing, how many people know the director Guy Madden, who's the mad Winnipegian of cinema? You guys know
I'm aware
him, right?
of him.
Okay, he's done some really interesting films, but he did a TV special, which is a short film, maybe about 70 minutes, and it's called Dracula Pages from a Virgin's Diary. Okay, it was done in tandem with the Winnipeg Ballet. So you have a ballet version of Dracula. And it is magnificent. It is just, and the interesting thing here is, it's a total Caucasian cast, but the person they cast for Dracula is Asian. And so there's that otherworldliness in those films. And it's just a fantastic. And the music also is done by I should know. I'll have to look it up. I'll tell you here in a second who did the music. But did you know that that version existed?
I have heard the title. I have not seen it.
Again, available on YouTube. And I think we have it on the ISF playlist also. But those are two, you know, versions particularly that are of the original story, but they're done in such a way to make them very, very unusual. And so I would recommend both of those. And I'll find out who did the music here in a second. So I'm done. You can move on from there, guys.
Well, I think it would be, I guess it would be my turn next. And
okay.
I want to go way back to the 20s, to a silent film by Carl Theodor Dreyer, based on the story by Sheridan Le Fanu, a film called Vampire. I assume you gentlemen have seen that.
Not only have I seen it, I consider it my favorite of all time.
Favorite film or favorite vampire film?
No. Favorite vampire film. And may I just say that was the same guy that did Ornette. Who directed that?
Pedro Dreyer.
Dreyer, right.
Just, and he also did Passion of Joan of Arc.
Incredible. Just an incredible film. Oh my God. The atmosphere is just freaking unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Now, Alan, you and I were talking about this film a little bit the other day, and you were talking about some of the imagery in it. Would you like to add something about that?
Well, there's a lot of iconic imagery. You know, you got the boatman that looks like almost reminiscent of Death in the River Styx. You know, everybody shows that still all the time because it's so iconic. You know, you got the ghostly images in the rooms. It's a remarkable film. Some people find it slow and boring. I find it, you know, atmospheric and disturbing, and that's the kind of film I enjoy. I have it on Region 2 Blu-ray. I've got both Criterion editions. I've seen it probably 5 times, and it's just something very different because it's not it doesn't hold to any of the, you know, vampire traditions, not like you would expect, you know. So
yep.
What it has is just some camera work and some atmosphere that scares the crap out of you. You know.
Oh, it's a wonderfully spooky tale.
Yes, it's spooky. That's a good word for it. Spooky.
And, you know, I actually want to add in a couple of personal anecdotes with this film for me. I first became aware of the film when I was young. I always enjoyed horror films. And when I was little, I would go to the library and I would get books on horror films. And one day I got this book on old horror movies, and it had this image and in it from Vampyr, and it was the one where the guy imagines himself being buried alive, and that image always stuck with me, and I always said, yeah, I need to see that movie, and I remembered the name of the movie for all these many, many, many years. And then one day, while I'm in grad school, before class, I stop off at Barnes & Noble, and there's a flash Criterion sale. They're having like 60% off, and I have a coupon, so I pick up Vampyr, and I finally see Vampyr. I only saw it for the first time 7 years ago. Well, I was on my way into class, and the class I was seeing was a film class. It was films as literature, and the room that it had, that the class was in, had this giant screen, but it was a projector that projected DVDs. So I got to sit down because there was no class for several hours in that room before my class, and to sit there and eat my lunch before class and watch Vampyr for the first time on a giant screen in stadium seating. And it made quite an impression.
Wow. That would be the way to see it. I've never seen it on a big screen.
Yeah, it was quite impressive. And a friend of mine, he knew that I was gonna start watching it, and he said, "Look, I have something that I have to do, so why don't you start it up, and I'll come in." And he did get there. I just started the movie, and he had seen it before, but he had not seen it big. And then other people trickled in, and not a single person asked me to turn the movie off. Everybody was like, oh, what's this? Oh, wow. They all wanted to watch it.
You know, one of the interesting things about that film is the film director himself, Dreyer. Dreyer was did a whole series of film on religious themes or death, the Passion of Joan of Arc, several films, which I just absolutely love. But if you look at Vampire and really look at it and experience it, those religious themes even come through in that film, which is quite something. And a lot of people don't realize that. The atmosphere, too, the use of fog and how they filmed all that, it's so much like a nightmare that it's really something. It's really something.
Yeah, and I called it a silent film, but it does exist with some soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And I believe, and I may be misremembering this, but the gentleman that plays the main character, I believe that he was some sort of a baron, and that he invested quite a bit of money into the film, if I'm remembering correctly. Am I remembering correctly, guys?
I don't know that at all, so I can't add to that.
I don't recall. Sorry.
Yeah, that just popped into my mind right now, and I was wondering if anybody could confirm that that wasn't some misremembering. But I think it's true. But if someone wants to look it up, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
But I think the other thing that makes it unique is it's got to be one of the earliest examples of, if not the earliest example, at least of a major film with a female vampire. And not only that, but it's an old woman.
Yeah.
And how often do we see older vampires? You know, usually they're younger people or at best middle-aged. We don't usually see basically a crone, for lack of a better term. It's a very unique film and a really lovely piece of art, because that's the only way to describe it, is that it's a piece of art.
Very true. Very true. Okay, do we get one more round, do we think?
Yeah. Well,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'd like to do one. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to throw up a couple out there. I'm going to throw one that I like and one that I think is stupid. I'm going to stupid one first. The stupid one is Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Oh, it's terrible. That's all I need to say about that.
Hold on, Alan. Okay? Is it stupid? Yes. Is it fun as hell?
Hell yes. It's fun.
You know, I mean, you know, just because a film is stupid doesn't mean it's not fun. And there's no way with that title that you're talking about something, you know, you're not talking about, you know, Sheridan Le Fanu and Camille. You know, you're not talking about literature. You're talking about, you know, pulp. And
it's
great
than,
pulp.
It's more fun than Van Helsing. I think it's more fun than Van Helsing.
Don't forget who the director is either. It's Timur Babetnikov. Who I friggin' love.
He did those two Russian vampire films, Night Watch and Day Watch.
Yes, and they
are
fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Those are great. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, now that I mentioned Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, totally weird film, yes, I want to mention the 2000 classic Shadow of the Vampire.
Boom.
Oh, of course you do.
You don't know that one?
Oh, of course you do.
It's a great film.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah,
Willem Dafoe
should have won the Oscar for that, for Best Supporting, period.
Well,
Willem
Dafoe, John Malkovich, and Udo Kier, and it's a film that it deals with what if, you know, the guy playing it deals with the filming of Nosferatu in 1922, and they start to think that Max Schreck, who's playing the vampire, is getting a little too much into his role. And, gee, is he might actually be a vampire after all. So, it's not your typical vampire film, and it's about making a vampire film. So that it's really interesting, and I highly recommend Shadow the Vampire from 2000.
Oh, absolutely!
Oh, it's a great film, and for me, it remains the best of Muricki's films. But it also has Cary Elwes in it. Let's not forget him. That's just a terrific cast.
Yes, it is, and it gets. I don't know why this thing gets overlooked a lot, and I don't know if it's because, you know, maybe it's a foreign director, maybe it's a, but, you know, you think because Nick Malkovich is in it, people would go, well, it's got the great John Malkovich, it's got to be, you know, fabulous, but I don't hear people, when I mention it to people, they're going like, what are you talking about, you know, and, you know, you have to explain it, and they're like, well, what, it deals with a silent film? I don't want to watch a silent film. No, you're missing the point here, and they don't get it.
No, they don't.
So yet,
they don't.
I tell them it's about a silent movie, and they don't understand. It's not a silent film. It's about a silent film. But then that loses them because, is it in black and white? No. Oh, God, stop. You know, the people want to just close their brains off.
Well, it's a case of people not understanding that the depiction of a thing is not the thing itself.
Yes, yes. Okay, and I'm going to give a quick shout-out to a film that has vampires in it, but it's not a vampire film, but I love this movie because I recommend the extended version of Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. There, I've said it. Okay.
Alrighty then.
Jeremy Renner. Yes. They go after every ball of bad guys. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. Go get a copy. I've got a freaking Blu-ray digibook of that thing. Extended version.
Oh,
good Lord.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, if I like Abraham Lincoln's Vampire Hunter, you are welcome to like Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. I give you props for
that. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I thank the Academy for this award.
Unfortunately, words that Eddie G. Robinson never got a chance to speak.
So. Okay.
So what about you, Doc?
Aha! What about me? Yes, what about me? Good question. Well, that's a good question. I would say at the time, when I saw Dracula 2000, I thought that the take on who Dracula really was kind of interesting. But if you look at it now, it's really kind of cliched. Spoiler alert, well, actually, the movie is 19 years old, so if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert anyway. Dracula in Dracula 2000 is actually Judas, who survived his suicide hanging, and it was a very, very interesting take on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's...
I like it.
I liked it too. It was fun. I saw it in the theaters. Now, this one is sort of vampirish, but not really vampire, but it's also debatable. There's the lady snake vampire creature with big, sharp, pointy fangs, hissing, spitting acid from Lair of the White Worm.
I freaking love that movie.
Nope. I saw it in the theater twice.
Nice.
Screw you. I saw it three times in the theater. I fell in love with Amanda Donahoe, and I'm not going to say anything more than that. You can imagine. Never mind.
Oh, she's in the Flash TV series. I love her. So, yeah.
And let's not forget Hugh Grant and Peter Capaldi is in that film.
I love the scene where they meet. And he says, not everyone likes earthworms with aspic.
Lair of the White Worm played in a tiny theater in D.C. on K Street or L Street, and I heard about that, and I went to see it with like 10 other people in a little theater that seated 100 people maybe. And, you know, we're sitting there going like, whoa, you know, it was outrageous.
It's
well,
it's
Ken Russell.
Yeah, I got the Blu-ray.
Very cool.
Hold on, before we go on, the other thing I love about that film is the whole snakes and ladders motif that he does throughout the film, too.
Yeah, and
Ken Russell was a very naughty boy.
Yeah.
Good one, Doc.
Okay, thank you. And also, VHS, a funny little thing. My grandfather, before he knew what was in the movie, actually bought the VHS for me when I was like, 13, so I really appreciate it.
Oh, boy.
Yep. And another sort of vampire, but not really vampire, is Zoltan, Hound of Dracula.
That just come out of Blu-ray, believe it or not.
Yes, it did. And I pre-ordered.
And it's terrible. It's terrible.
Yep.
I prefer Dracula's dog better.
Yeah, same thing. Dracula's dog. Sold for like $75. Their major prop was renting an RV.
Yep.
Silly movie.
Now, speaking of a prop, does anybody remember which Dracula movie was it where I think it had Christopher Lee in it and he became a vampire in it just by putting on the cape of Dracula? Does anyone remember that one?
No, I know. Yes. I can't think of the name of it, but I know the film exists, and absolutely, you're right.
Yeah, just you guys mentioning a prop, that made me think of, I was like, what was that prop Dracula one? Yeah, but something else, because this show is going to focus in the future largely on television, I don't want to leave without mentioning the brief run show. I believe it only has about 8 or 10 episodes. It was called Kindred the Embrace. It was produced by Aaron Spelling and E. Duke Vincent.
I was going to talk about that next. Yeah, it's on DVD, and I was going to talk about that.
Well,
you beat me to it.
Well, I'll do the introduction, and I'll let you get to it. And it was based on Mark Reinhagen's vampire mythos that he created for the White Wolf Publications World of Darkness role-playing system, and it actually really surprised me. But apparently Alan also is really fond of the show, so I'll let him talk about this show, which, surprisingly, being a Spelling show, is nowhere near a soap opera.
It's not a soap opera. It was actually a very well-done series that had got middling ratings, and before it got new, the star was injured in France. I think he was hit by a motorcycle or something. But titles are kind of funny. The episode titles make me laugh because there's an episode called Prince of the City, which is the title of another film. Night Stalker, which is the title of a film. Romeo and Juliet, which is the title of a film. Bad Moon Rising, which is the title of a film, though nothing to do with vampires. And the last episode they broadcast was called Cabin in the Woods. That's funny. And I wonder if that inspired the movie in any way. I don't know. I'm freelancing here.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Alan, because I remember reading a story about that. And Fox was really nervous about the titles. But apparently Spelling himself went to bat for the show and said, oh, come on, it's good fun. Some people are going to enjoy it. Most people's going to go over their heads. Let's just do it. And so Fox said, okay.
You can't copyright a title. You can copyright a logo, but not a title. So let's not
right,
be silly
but,
about
you know,
that.
Fox was still worried that people were going to groan and be upset. But, you know, he convinced them that it was okay. But I like the fact that, you know, you had this great big mythology, and the acting was really good. What was the guy's name that played the villain for the first season, Fury, Eddie Fury? Brian Thompson, was that his name? But he always does really good work, and ever since that show, every time I see him in anything, I always think back to that show. I go, oh, look, it's Fury again.
Right.
It's a really great little show for those of you who haven't seen it. As Alan said, it's on DVD and very worth seeing.
Yes. It's probably out of print, but you can probably get a copy somehow. Look, we're talking about strange vampire movies. We got to mention one of the strangest of all times that starred one of the biggest actors of the last century. The Return of Dr. X. The Return of Dr.
Nice.
X. With Humphrey Bogart pissed off his studio bosses. He got loaned out to do this low-budget thriller where he creates some kind of chemical that turns him into a sort of synthetic vampire. And it's the only horror movie Bogart ever did, and it's one you should see because it's pretty dang funny because they got Bogart looking kind of, pale, and he tries very hard, but he didn't want to do the film.
Well, I have to say that if Bogey hadn't been, already become a successful star, I don't know how successful he was by that point, because I forget the year the movie came out, but
well,
if he
had... It was 39, and the movie was supposed to star Karloff, but they made Bogey do it because he pissed off the studio bosses. And back then, when the way the studio system worked, they owned your contract, and if you made them mad, they could loan you out to another studio. They could not put you in a film that you wanted. They could cut your salary or something. So they stuck him in this film as punishment, and it's one he always wanted to forget because, a couple years later, the following year he did Maltese Falcon, and then after that he did Casablanca. So, it's not a terrible film. It's just not what you'd expect from a Humphrey Bogart film. And it's a pseudo vampire because he's not a supernatural vampire. He's like more biased, a living vampire in a sense, that he becomes that way due to chemicals and stuff.
Right.
Well,
nice.
Bias is a Marvel character, trademark. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And that reminds me of something, of one more film, but no one's mentioned it. But, Carl, did you have one other film you wanted to mention?
Yeah, and I know you're going to go with the specific film, so I'm going to go with another one. And I've got it up here. Have any of you ever seen Lamora, A Child's Tale of the Supernatural?
Nope.
Yes.
Okay.
Not yet.
This is a very interesting film. Stars Cheryl Smith, or Rainbow Smith, Cheryl Smith, as Lila Lee. She is the lead singer in a Baptist church, and she's an angel, and her father is a gangster who is killed, or supposedly killed, and gets a note from him and hitchhikes out to him, and of course all the men are trying to get in her pants, and she ends up with Lamora, who is and in this forest where there are supernatural beings, and Lamora is a female vampire. There's hints of lesbianism. There's all sorts of stuff going on, and it's like a fairy tale. And the interesting thing, it's written and directed by Richard Blackburn. Now, does that name mean anything to you? Anyone?
Didn't he go on to work on Dark Shadows?
No. However, he did write one of the most wonderful horror comedies ever. And that would be Eating Raoul.
Yep.
Oh, of course.
And he worked in Chile. Yep, he did.
Yep. This is a really, really unique film. And
it is.
It was PG, but even in its cut form, 83 minutes, it pushes an R. But if you have ever seen the uncut version, which is 114 minutes, and it has not been released, I don't know if it's available, but my Lord, from what I hear, it's a real, real trip, and it earns a hard R.
I have the Synapse edition. I forget how long it is. It's downstairs, but I do have it. I've seen it a couple times, but not recently. But yes.
Hey, could you throw that in the box next time?
If I must.
Thank
now,
you, please.
I will say this, that it is a really unique film. You talk about dream imagery. And we were talking about, Vampire. The imagery here is absolutely unbelievable. And just so eerie and beautiful and well done. You were talking about child vampires. There's several of them here. You know, the story is just so unique. And of course, it's a amalgam to, of course, puberty and sexuality and experimentation. And you're not going to see anything like this. So you need to see it. And I recommend it extremely highly.
I heard about it from a friend of mine who's now out in California. It was the last person I ever thought would tell me about a vampire film because, I don't know. It just never, you know, she's telling me about it. I'm like, okay. And I looked it up, and this was about 10 years ago. I don't know, sometime. And sure enough, and, you know, I snapped up a copy and, it definitely, it's as good as Carl says. There's no question about that. I forgot to mention that one because for some reason I didn't have it in my list of vampire films. I have to move it into the vampire category. I have a list here of all my vampire movies, and that wasn't in that. It was in regular horror.
The vampiric element is not first and foremost in it.
I know, but I still should have had it in there.
Yeah.
I still should have.
But yeah, definitely wanted to mention that one. So we'll kick it over to you, Adam. So what do you got?
I've got Guillermo del Toro's first feature film, Kronos, which is about an alchemist who creates a device that gives him extreme long life, but at a cost of blood. And he invents it in Veracruz sometime in the 1500s. And then in the mid to late 1930s, the building that he's still existing in is destroyed. And he's destroyed along with the building. And this scarab device, the device that's given him this long life, passes to this antiques dealer. And he uses the device and begins to become vigorous again, but at a cost of desiring blood. And then you add in people wanting the device for other reasons, a mobster played by Ron Perlman. And it is just a terrific romp of a movie that, believe it or not, I've seen scenes from it several times since, but I've only seen the film in its entirety once, but it made a profound impact on me at the time and instantly turned me into a fan of that director's work.
It's a great film.
Yeah, it is.
The one thing I would mention, Adam, is that really the film isn't about vampirism. It's about that relationship with his granddaughter.
And
how
beautiful relationship.
Oh, it's and that's the one thing about Del Toro. You know, at the heart of all his films, with maybe the exception of Pacific Rim, it's about relationship. Always about relationship.
And Pacific Rim even tries that, but just kind of fails.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's a great movie. It really is. I don't know. I mean, Alan, you've seen it, right?
Yes.
Any thoughts on it?
I haven't seen it recently, but it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
I remember liking it, and I'm pretty sure it's in the collection, so yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it more than once on the Sci-Fi Channel back in the early 2000s when the Sci-Fi Channel was actually cool and played movies that were good.
Yep, and that's actually where I saw it because it made its debut on the Sci-Fi Channel during the middle of the day, and they ran it long. They ran it uncut with, like, limited commercials. And I sat there and watched it. This was sometime in the 90s, I want to say, like maybe it must have been around the time Mimic came out. And I was like, oh, so this is that guy? And I was like, oh, wow, yeah, he can actually do good movies.
Mm-hmm. I like Mimic. It was cheesy fun.
Well, Mimic has some very good creature effects for darn sure.
Oh, I like Mimic. The first Mimic. The first one.
The only Mimic. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
There were sequels? I know of no sequels.
There were well, the sequel.
No, there weren't.
Right. I'm going to toss out, we're talking unusual vampire films. Anybody seen the Bloodthirsty trilogy?
Oh, yes.
No.
The Toho vampire films. Those were awesome.
No.
Vampire Doll.
Yes. Right.
Vampire
Doll. The
Vampire
Doll.
Really
Lake of Dracula. Evil of Dracula. 1970,
okay, I have seen Evil of Dracula.
Those, they're very weird. They're not conventional vampire movies. They are unusual for sure. But I recommend all three. And Arrow put all three in a box set, not a couple of years ago. So Bloodthirsty Trilogy, it's definitely worth your time.
I can back that up 1,000%, without a doubt. They are really, really good.
Yes. The first and third one I like. Better than the second one, I think, is the weakest, might be the weakest of the three, but I don't know. I like all three of them. Not just totally out of left field because they're Japanese vampire films that they're not really that conventional, and they also don't conform to a specific period because the third one, I think that one of them starts out in the 1600s or something. So, because Dracula is shipwrecked in Japan in the 1600s. Yeah. So, you know, we'll figure that one out. And if you guys... 30 Days a Night and its sequel, which went straight to video, but 30 Days a Night, boy,
that's a good
that's
little
some
film.
Wild stuff. Based
that's
on
a good little
book
film.
Yeah, 30 Days is interesting.
Because it doesn't hold back. I don't very much. You know, it's not your creepy vampire movie. You know, with Dracula, you know, picking out women. You know, after the opera, it's like, hey, we got, you know, it's going to be dark for 30 days. We don't have to worry about going to our coffins. We could just kill everybody in this little village here.
Well, you know, speaking about vampire films that don't hold back, what about Vampires, the Carpenter film?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is about that is it starts out really good, but I think the second half it something loses it there after his team. I don't give us spoilers, but you know, for me, look, there was a book called Vampires where the S was a dollar sign, and that's what this movie is based on. And that in that film, you know, the Vatican, the team of vampire hunters is works for the Vatican, and the book to me was 10 times better than the film. The film starts out great, and I always felt it loses a lot by the end. Just my take on it. I bought the Twilight Time Blu-ray, but I still think it doesn't hold up for an ending.
Mm-hmm. Well, to add something to your 30 days, because it just makes me think of something. You know, where you said, you know, it's like 30 days, we don't have to worry, we don't have to go back to our coffins. There was a similar movie, not like 30 Days of Night, but where the vampires had basically taken over, and that's a film that also has Willem Dafoe, and that's Daybreakers. Did anyone see that?
I was going to mention Daybreakers. Oh, definitely going to mention Daybreakers.
I was going to mention it too. I was getting to that.
And it's a damn shame we never got to see the sequel.
I got it on DVD or Blu-ray, I forget which. I saw it in theater, though.
Yeah, me too.
I thought the way that they cure themselves was a tad, I don't know, out of left field, the way the guy went back to normal, but, yeah.
I thought that was one of the cooler parts of the movie.
It had an interesting premise, and I like, you know, how people, you know, they're trying to buy their daily blood at Starbucks, Starbloods, and, you know, they're running out of blood, and, oh, my God, it's hilarious. They could have given me 5 minutes of that, and I would have cracked up. There's not enough blood in my hamburger.
Well, you know, and Sam Neill as the villain was just delicious. He was channeling, oh God, what's his name? Was he or was he not channeling a bit of the old Ray Wise smarm in that?
Oh, are you kidding?
Well, yeah. I agree. That's good.
So do we have any others, or are we basically done at this point? Because I don't have anything else.
I'm good to go.
Yeah, there's definitely a ton more to talk about,
There's other ones. I can mention The Breed. Another science fiction. It's a distant... Well, The Breed, from distant future, vampires that come out of the shadows and trying living with people, and you know, it's okay. It's from 2001, and you know, your results may vary. It's kind of okay. Stars Adrian Paul. The Breed. If you want your futuristic vampire movie. What else is there? I always thought From Dusk to Dawn was pretty cool, and that it wasn't really they weren't conventional vampires because the shape shifting went out a little out of control. Near Dark is definitely.
Oh yeah, you should definitely mention Near Dark. Yeah.
Near Dark's not your normal vampire film, and there's like the one guy, he kind of implies he's been around since the Civil War, and you know you do have a young vampire and a teenage boy. That film, of course, they throw out there that maybe you can be cured of being a vampire through transfusions or something, but. It's still that. See, what makes me mad is that film came out around near the same time as Lost Boys. I hate Lost Boys. Near Dark was a better movie and got overshadowed by Lost Boys because Lost Boys had Kiefer and all the good-looking guys in it, and everyone ignores Catherine Bigelow's classic Near Dark, which really deserves a deluxe Blu-ray treatment and everything. And I don't think it's got it yet, but. You know, Lost Boys, you suck. Oh, Blu-ray of Near Dark is $80. Oh, my God.
You just reminded me of one last movie we have to mention.
No.
I have to give a shout-out to Fright Night.
I would say the original. It's not the remake, correct?
Oh, God, no. Not the remake. The remake doesn't exist.
Remake doesn't exist, right? No, the original is, it's a fun film. It's not, I got the Twilight Time edition. It's good.
As far as the original, I'm sorry, but that's Roddy McDowell's film.
Oh, it is. Him and Chris Sarandon did marvelous work in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I really think that Roddy McDowell is underrated in a lot of ways. You know, because you see him in these type of roles, oh, it's Roddy McDowell, he does that all the time. No. He's really good in this. And of course, my other one that he's in that I love is Legend of Hell House. But he's very underrated, I think. And, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't get enough respect.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I
get. Oh, he's the goofy scientist in Planet of the Apes. You know, the ape scientist. Yeah, it's all he's. Yeah. That's about it.
Well, we had two very fine actors named McDowell, but one of them gets no respect because he did Planet of the Apes, which is a real shame. And that really is about the size of it. I keep hearing the same thing you just said. People say, "Well, wasn't he in Planet of the Apes?" I mean, he can't be that good. I'm like, have you ever looked at his career?
Oh, good God. Unbelievable.
They know him for the one thing, and they ignore the rest of his work, you know, and that's just unfair, but that's how it goes. But then everybody talks about how great Malcolm McDowell is, and he is good, but he's not the only guy out there.
No.
No, I love both of them. I love Malcolm too. I'm a huge Malcolm fan. So.
Yeah, so am I.
And I have to say, just speaking of him, this has nothing to do with vampires, but if you like Malcolm McDowell, you need to check out an Amazon series he did called Mozart in the Jungle. He was a regular there, and it's some of his best work.
Oh, and if we're talking one of the most horrible vampire films ever made with Malcolm, you might want to go see Bite, or maybe you don't want to because
no,
it bites.
You don't.
Okay,
no.
I'm just saying.
No, but so that this thing doesn't run too long, I would like to kind of. End it here and thank everybody for coming. I think we had a good first show and some great discussion.
Absolutely. So before we go, Doc, do you have anything planned on Friday or on Sunday?
Well, actually, I will be doing a movie review tomorrow. It was originally supposed to take place Wednesday, but this week got really insane, but in a good way, really quickly. So I'll be doing Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema movie review tomorrow. The subject matter for Sunday's show is kind of up in the air still. I have to talk to Danae about a couple things. And we will be having a show on Sunday, definitely. But what it is, we don't know yet.
Interesting.
Okay. By the way, Doc, are you going to be on Wild Side at 7 o'clock with Steven, too?
Yeah. Actually, that's exactly what we're doing. I had a brain fart there. I'm sorry. It's just in case none of our listeners knew what happened this afternoon, but I was charged by a rabid raccoon. It pretty much tore through the neighborhood, went after a couple of our stray cats. They're okay. I'm okay. The raccoon was taken care of by the police, so my mind was a little preoccupied. Yes, I will be on Wildside Radio with Steve Onkeo for the drive-in Monsterama show, which we will actually be putting on. We're going to take the show and put it on our network also. So that's going to be pretty good. Pretty awesome.
And it's always nice to work with Steven. So next Friday, I will be doing the show. I'm not sure about what yet. But in 2 weeks, we will have the return of Adam and Adam's Cathode Ray Mission. And Adam, do you have any idea what you're going to do in 2 weeks?
Yes, I do. We are going to discuss one of the landmark TV series, one of the giant science fiction series, and my second favorite science fiction series of all time, and that is a series called Babylon 5. We will be discussing it in as much depth as we can possibly stick into our allotted time, and we will also be touching a little bit on the comics and the books, but we'll also spend a little bit of time on the spinoff, the short-lived spinoff, Crusade. And I look real forward to discussing that with everyone next time.
All right. Well, Adam, I want to thank you for joining us here at Deviant Legion.
Thank you.
So why don't you go take us out?
Well, thank you, Doc. Thank you, Carl. And thank you, Alan. It's been a pleasure. And thank you to our listeners. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I think we've all enjoyed doing it. And see you again in 2 weeks.
All right. Awesome. Thank you very much, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.